plate a potential nugget.
Moving on to a different theme, Matt, how do you think about expanding or strengthening the mental reservoir of strength that we need to leverage? And the reason I ask is in endurance sport, triathlons and related sports, it's a lot about the mind. So how do you think about systematically expanding that reservoir that people can draw on?
I think that confidence as a coach, you cannot develop confidence. You can set a pathway, you can be the driver behind it, but the quest is to put people in repeatable learning experiences. And when people become familiar and they see progress, confidence grows out of it. And so we're always looking for the opportunity to put them into what we always call successful challenge. In other words, challenging people, but not so that they fail, but so that they can just be successful and grow from it. Another component that confidence comes out of is really framing what success is and realizing, and in many ways, framing what failure is. Many people see so many life experiences and so many sporting experiences as being pass-fail. But we have success and we have opportunity for growth. And when we look at the most successful athletes every time, they are the athletes that have understood or developed the resilience and the tools to navigate failure. In fact, the one thing that's consistent is they've failed a heck of a lot. And so strength and confidence and mental resilience comes out of repeatable learning behaviors, developing the resilience of failure and the growth opportunities that come from it. I'll tell you, Deepak, when we have athletes that go to races, one of our phrases that we use is freedom to fail. So you've got an athlete that's stepping up into the world championships, and there's obviously a strategy behind how they're going to approach the race. But we say you have absolute freedom to fail. To many people, that sounds defeatist, but it's not. It's ultimately there are things you can control and cannot control. And in sport, we cannot ultimately determine success. What we can do is do everything that we can do in our power to give ourselves the best performance necessary. And if we do everything in our power and we don't win, that is successful failure, and that's an opportunity for growth. And so I think that the driver behind it is exposure, framing success, and then ultimately the one final component, and this carries from sport all the way across to life and of course into business development, realizing that underneath that, what I really said was embracing the journey. You can't rush it. And confidence comes out of wisdom and growth over time. It's never just going to arrive into an employee or into an athlete.
And back to these athletes who treat failure as a learning opportunity. Again, if I were to go beyond the, let's say, the cliches and dive into that moment in time, let's say somebody is prepared for a world championship, which comes maybe once in every few years. Mm-hmm. You've trained hard day in, day out, and then you have a bad day and you don't win a medal or you don't finish well. What is it about successful athletes, about how they process that moment, you know, the moment when they finish the race? Just sort of maybe double click on that for us and make it real for us in terms of how they process those moments when moments of truth, if you will.
I think the first thing to say is that it's really painful. And so when we talk about athletes becoming really, really equipped to manage failure, it doesn't mean they like failure, and it doesn't mean that pain isn't there. And in fact, great athletes despise failure, and that's important. They want to win, but the key is that managing and adapting to it is learnable. It's a skill and it fits within context. So the first thing that I'll say is that while we have these races, world championships, Olympic Games, components like that, the most successful athletes tend to be less outcome driven with particular events or singular events and then singular races. Most athletes tend to be intrinsically driven to in the pursuit of finding their best performance. So that is a really empowering mindset. For a company, if the quest is, oh, I just want to take the company public, I want to take the company public, that tends to be a bit more outcome focused and ultimately less impactful than I want to create an absolutely amazing company that is going to have this impact for this reason and I'm going to get immense satisfaction. And the byproduct of it might be that I go public, or the byproduct might be I win a world championship. And so the first component to it is framing why the athlete does what they do. And very, very few of the very best athletes across all sports think, I only do this sport to win a World Cup or to win an Olympic medal. They are on a personal quest to become great, and they love the sport and they love the journey. And I think that passion component is the first step of resilience. The second component then is really what you ask, what happens when you do have a really poor performance? And I think there's a phase or a series of phases that you go through. The first is to lean into the grieving of it. And so when an athlete has a bad race, the first thing that we avoid is immediate analysis, trying to find the solution or the reason for that failure within the first 48 hours, because it's impossible to think logically, think clearly, and objectively and analyze yourself and how you went into that race with a clear head when you have the pain that is there. So instead, we give, and we talk about this, the grieving process. We give you, for the athlete, 24 to 72 hours, depending on the size of the event or the impact that it's had on them, just to be, just to let it marinate. And then we go through and we do a really objective analysis. And I think this is really important, not just in failure, but also in success. Why did we succeed? And why did we fail? And when we think about that component, we look at it really anchors on controllable and things that were out of your control. So did you do everything that was necessary that you were trained to do in order to be successful? And those are the areas that are actionable. So we always start with this thing, control what you can control, act on what you can impact. And an athlete is much better equipped to get over the grieving, get over the pain and move on if they have clarity in the areas that they can improve on next time and in areas that they can grow. They also are better equipped to retain motivation and get over the grieving as well if they acknowledge the areas that were just out of their control. They had equipment failure. Someone was better than them. The environment, something changed with the environment, whatever it might be. And so by differentiating between areas that you can control and impact and grow for next time, and then saying, look, this just happened, it's a much better bridge to move on to progress for next time.
And maybe just sticking to that, the way you debrief an outcome, whether it's a win or a loss, what are some of the things that you find to be in the blind spot of the athlete that sometimes you see but the athlete doesn't?
I think that many athletes have very short-term memories. In fact, we all have short-term memories. And when we think about the most common one that we have is if an athlete has had a highly inconsistent runway into the race. so much has gone wrong, and it doesn't mean that necessarily a wonderful performance can't come out of it. The first step for that athlete, if they have a challenging performance, is they consistently fail to self-reflect and in an objective way acknowledge or join the dots that maybe their preparation wasn't optimal. And the reason for that is a really good thing is self-belief and desire to be great. And so great athletes have the ability to ignore adversity and still drive forward. But when things don't go well, quite often they have a hard time joining the dots. And so when an athlete has failed or faced challenge, I think that the blind spot is that word perspective of coming up and being able to just say, let's not try and find a guilty party for the reason that your performance wasn't great. Let's actually paint a global picture. And that's incredibly hard for an athlete or an employee when they're so passionate and so motivated and so dedicated. It becomes a very challenging. And I think if there is the biggest impact of a coach, it's the ability to help the athlete come up for perspective and see the big picture. And it's an incredibly hard thing to do by yourself. But once you're taken on that journey, it's the most empowering and impactful thing that you can do as an athlete.
Couple of things struck me here. First is the point that Matt makes about the criticality of a successful challenge. He speaks about the step being small enough that it feels like a win, but large enough that it moves you forward in the context of your objective. Sean Young, the author of Stick With It, The Science of Lasting Behavior, talks about the notion of step ladders or baby steps where you set yourself a small stretch target and then you deliver it. He says that the reason it possibly works is due to the dopamine rush you get when you make it happen. And that gives you added momentum and moves you in the direction you want. He says that too many people put themselves through too much misery for a dopamine rush in the end. And structurally, it's hard to motivate yourself day in and day out towards the goal with that much asymmetry of payoffs. The other point that Matt makes is so true. The way the leaders see the world inside out is very different from how I as a coach see it outside in. This is where I see the difference between coachable and non-coachable leaders. The coachable ones actually are willing to be vulnerable and explore blind spots in their thinking as they debrief on the situation, while the less coachable ones often tend to externalize the problem and pick on some people that might have caused this. Thank you for listening. Please visit playtopotential.com for more content. You could visit the curated playlist section for specific bite-sized nuggets that are captured by themes, some of which might be relevant for you. You can also find the podcast offline on platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you find this content purposeful, please rate and review wherever you consume this content. It will help others discover it. To receive updates on new content at the podcast, please sign up at playtopotential.com.